From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our topic on this edition of the program, healthcare in America and the status of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Our guest, healthcare advocate, nurse, and author, Michelle Katz. We hosted Michelle earlier this year, and we are delighted to have her back to further discuss her new book, Healthcare Made Easy, Answers to All Your Healthcare Questions Under the Affordable Care Act. The purpose of her new book, Healthcare Made Easy, is to guide Americans through the complexities of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. She explains how it works, how it affects each American subject to the law, and the steps one must take to follow its rules and to experience its benefits. The Affordable Care Act is U.S. President Barack Obama's signature domestic legislative achievement. It is meant to cover millions of Americans who heretofore had been denied access to basic health care. While many Americans are grateful for the coverage, the Affordable Care Act is not without flaws, and many opponents on Capitol Hill, primarily Republicans, are bent and determined to repeal the law or to try to defund it. We'll talk with Michelle Katz, who is steeped in not only the ins and outs of the law and how it affects Americans, but who is also clued in on the political challenges the law faces as the Republican-controlled Congress is sure to attempt once again to derail the legislation. And Michelle Katz, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Carol.
Well, we're delighted. Let me first ask you, Michelle, talk about the benefits and the drawbacks of Obamacare. Talk about why it was so important to have some kind of health care law, given the state of health care here in America until now.
Well, as we all know, health care costs are going out of control right now. A lot of people were not able to be covered before. We are all finding that our health insurance premiums are going up and there's less being covered. There's a big uproar in the physicians. They're getting reimbursed less and less right now. A lot of physicians are dropping out of plans, as a lot of us are even seeing here under the Affordable Care Act. What is happening is you can stay, children or young adults can stay under the insurance plan, their parents, until they're 26, which was a positive thing. And those who really were not insured or able to get insurance before can actually get insurance.
What about the pre-existing condition benefit? That particularly was most welcome.
Yes, that was definitely. I've seen that in a lot of my own patients. I've had patients that have had medication that was $3,000 a month that actually now under the Affordable Care Act can get that covered.
Indeed. Michelle, I'd like to get your honest assessment of the legislation. We know there's so much politics, as I said. Many Republicans, for some strange reason, are dead set against the law, possibly partly because they don't like the gentleman, that is, the president, who actually promulgated the law. An irony therein, because many say the blueprint for Obamacare was actually developed by a very conservative think tank here in the United States, the Heritage Foundation. But now that President Obama has been championing the law, formed the basis of now the Affordable Care Act, they're suddenly against it.
Right.
So there's so much politics, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's always politics as usual in D.C. The thing is, like you said, it was a blueprint. But the funds for certain sections was not allocated to enforce some of these things that are in the legislation. There was a lot of talk about the wellness programs, that companies would be reimbursed for certain programs. Now there's no money in that particular piece of legislation to fund these programs. Were some preventative programs. They were allowing, like, companies, they were going to give them a certain percentage of it, and it's actually written in parts of the legislation, but now where they're finding it, the funds are running out. We need to be very careful, and that's where we're going to see a lot of changes. Medicare started out completely different years ago, and now it's going to be changing with the new administration.
What do you mean when you say new administration?
Well, when we're coming up to the new year, there's going to be a lot of changes in, like, 2016. A lot of these tax subsidies, there's no money funding subsidies for small businesses. There's going to be unhappy people there and a lot of surprises.
The Supreme Court is expected to rule on a case that could cause millions of Americans to lose the subsidy payments that allow them to buy Obamacare. How worried are you about this decision? And what happens if the court strikes down the health subsidies in 36 or so states that are currently permitted?
We have to understand that this is mostly going to affect those in the federally funded states. If you're in a state-funded state, it's only going to set a tone for those states, and it depends on the money that's being pumped into Medicaid. Everybody keeps on saying, oh, it's going to overrule. This is not true. This is going to be a ruffle in the system.
All right. And of course, just for our listeners, when you refer to Medicaid, we're talking about federally funded program primarily for people under the poverty line. And of course, Medicare is the health care program for senior citizens, people over 65.
Yes, usually about 65.
Now, the political debate over the health care law never seems to end. Opinion polls show the country still remains divided on the law and that a number of Republicans running for president have vowed to work to repeal the law if they are elected. How much of a problem is it still concerning the political uncertainty about this law?
To be quite honest, it's already done. As I said before, it's all about working with what we have. What are they going to do about those people that were taxed last year suddenly say, oh, we're going to pay you back, it was a mistake? They're not going to do that. It's already in law.
As I said, it appears to be divided. Are there more people in favor or against, would you say, Americans? Where do they come down on the law? You know, many say that President Obama probably should have sold it better, done a better job of either marketing and or educating. Perhaps he would have had more popular support.
The president is just very busy. He's got people working for him, and it's up to those groups that are hired on to actually make sure that this message is brought across. I don't think they did a very good job marketing it out or explaining it at all. And I think people are first trying to find out about it. And that's why I came out with my book, Healthcare Made Easy, to help people get through what you need to know. It's overwhelming. I've looked at the piece of legislation. I'm not an attorney, so it depends on how you translate it. And as most people are finding it, you can translate it in a whole bunch of different ways. It depends on what type of attorney you are.
We're talking with Michelle Katz. She's a licensed practical nurse, and she's also the author of Healthcare Made Easy, Answers to All of Your Healthcare Questions Under the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare.
Jazz America!
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Well, Michelle, let's turn to how Obamacare compares with other similar insurance or health care programs in other developed countries, especially because our audience is primarily overseas. We talk about Europe, whether it's the national health care law in Britain or the health care system in Scandinavian countries or even in France. Okay, these are, you know, smaller countries, certainly population-wise, not nearly as big as the United States or diverse. But how is it that, you know, the most developed country in the world is still so far behind in terms of covering its average American citizen, even with Obamacare, as you said, so many political challenges and so many different interpretations, notwithstanding the many benefits that people are seeing?
You know, it depends. I talk to people that there are some people out there that love the legislation. They never got insurance before. They have pre-existing conditions. They love this. Then there are others that are like, you know, I've traveled overseas. I didn't have insurance. And guess what? I got my ultrasound for $20 or I got my medication for $2. And then over here, they have to pay a $30 copay or even an $800 copay. It just depends on who you're with, where you go, what hospitals, and what ailments you go for. You're going to have different opinions from different people, and it also the population. You mentioned that just before. It depends on how many people are paying into the system. You have other systems like Britain, who basically their taxes, or even Canada, their taxes are very high, and a certain percentage, more than our system, that goes into the taxes that goes into their healthcare system. Now, I've heard that Britain's actually changing their system to be more like the American system, so that's going to be very interesting. But they also have different things that they cover, and they have less people there. Whereas Canada, I have a friend that just complained the other day and said paying 23% taxes in California and was paying 22% in Canada, and all her health care is free. It just depends on where you are and what you need.
Well, you brought up taxes, and of course, that's not very popular here in America, whether among Democrats or Republicans, but particularly Republicans run against raising taxes, even if it's for the benefit of many Americans, whether it's helping provide for health care or clean water or the environment. But there's another interesting factor with respect to Obamacare, and that is Obamacare works if young people and healthy people sign up for it to make the pool larger. So that's another question I have for you. To what extent are we seeing young people signing up and healthy people? Because, of course, the Obama administration said that they wanted many more people to do that and that they were going to, you know, make a push for that. How's that campaign going?
Well, it's pretty funny you mention this because I think it would be a lot easier for the young and healthy to sign up if the system itself was working where it was easy to sign up for.
When the plan was rolled out and when people were asked to sign up, we had this very unfortunate
yes.
glitch is an understatement, but that really was unfortunate, the website.
Well, the problem is when you sign up for Obamacare, one hand is not talking to the other. Or I've heard this so many times where somebody's like in between, especially somebody who's off their parents' insurance for the first time, just got into a new job, maybe about 27, and basically they qualify for Medicaid, but not quite yet. Basically, they call into the healthcare.gov, and healthcare.gov says, you know what, we have to send you over to, and you qualify for Medicaid. They call up Medicaid, and they say, you can get subsidies. So this poor person is going back and forth and getting bumped around because they're right in the middle of that bracket. And it goes, even if you're under unemployment in some states, you actually don't qualify for Medicaid. You still qualify for a regular subsidized plan under healthcare.gov.
So again, many bureaucratic hurdles to prevent people, young people and others, from signing up, which again, as we said, base of individuals is important to keep the healthcare costs lower.
And that's what's happening a lot of, I think what's happening is the younger people, the younger and healthier, they get so frustrated because they're taking hours off work to try to sign up and get guidance. They're not getting the correct guidance. They're getting frustrated. And they said, okay, I'm not signing up. And that's it. Or you're running into another bracket where they're not making enough, even with subsidies. So half of their paycheck is going towards paying for health insurance that's not even covering what they need. So then they say, oh, I'm not paying for this. Forget it.
And that leads me to the next question, which is if they don't sign up, right, some are subject to a penalty. Mm-hmm. Talk about the penalty and if paying the penalty is maybe less expensive than signing up for a particular age bracket.
Well, I've told people that if you've got a great network of doctors and you know the hospitals, you know the system like I do, sometimes it may be less expensive, depending on what your bracket is and income, for you to maybe have your own health insurance. And I say this, having your own is basically customizing it where you're negotiating yourself and you don't have health insurance. So why not pay the 2% of your income if it's a certain amount?
And which is a penalty.
Yeah, which is a penalty. And what you want to do is look at your deductible, add that to look at your month. How much are you paying a month? Is it $200 a month or is it $500 a month? Take that, multiply it by 12, and then calculate your deductible in that. And then add those two together. And if you find out that, you know what, I can be putting this money into my 401k or a retirement plan or just putting it aside and having it collect interest. And then basically I will take that money out of my 401k with not as steep of a penalty for medical bills. Also, you want to be sure that if you had an accident, like I've had an accident, that if it's a certain amount of money, usually it's 10% now above your adjusted gross income that you're paying in bills, then you might actually be exempt for 2 years. So make sure you keep that documentation, keep all your bills, keep them in a stack, because you might actually be exempt, but you have to sign up, go to the website. There's a list of exemptions. I list them in my book. And look at that and see what you're exempt. There's so many exemptions people don't know about, especially this one. If you have such high medical bills, you might actually be exempt.
We'll talk more about Obamacare and the U.S. healthcare system in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is Michelle Katz. She's a healthcare advocate, nurse, and author of the recently published book, Healthcare Made Easy, Answers to All Your Healthcare Questions Under the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. You may also send feedback via email to PCUSA@voanews.com. Tell us where you're from and how you listen to the program. Here's a big shout out to Caleb Ulasi. He's a very loyal Nigerian listener. He listens via the radio and sometimes via the internet. We always appreciate your feedback, Caleb.
Here's a quick quiz. What do the letters LTATOMLAW stand for? We know the answer, right? Listen to Akwe Thompson on Nightline Africa Weekends. Add to that 16 and 18 UTC on VOA, and we have a perfect score. That was easy.
Well, back to you, Michelle Katz, our special guest, author of Healthcare Made Easy. Well, let's talk more about the U.S. healthcare system, how to navigate it. It's a very, I would call, curative system, would you not?
Yes. I think you're maybe overestimating.
Right. It's an understatement.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about preventative health care because you have some excellent tips in your book about that, because I think it's better if you don't get sick in this country than to have to see a doctor or certainly if you have to go to the hospital. And I'll talk about my experience also a little bit later in the program. But what are some of the, would you say, most common billing errors, for example? We know that, as I said, I alluded to the fact that it's a curative system and it's very much a system that is looking to make money off of sick people, which is, you know, as I said, very unfortunate, but it just happens to be the truth. And people in these offices, nurses, administrative people, they code your sickness or ailment. They give it a special code. Then the insurance company looks at that and then they decide whether or not they're going to reimburse or not. How common are billing errors in this country?
I find that in every bill I've looked at recently, there's been about 20% errors in every single bill, whether it be a name that's spelled wrong, a social security number that's not on there, an address, or even what I call fat fingers is when somebody accidentally types in the wrong, as you said, the numbers, which are these codes that result in the claims. That's wrong. There's even errors in the wrong physician that comes in your room. You know, you go in for some, like a colonoscopy, and you get billed for a pediatrician. People need to make sure they read their bills. And one of the biggest tips I always tell people before you leave the hospital, always get a copy of your medical records, any labs that were done, as well as an itemized bill. And it may be a week or two after, you might have to request it, sign some papers, but always get a copy of those bills, the itemized bill and your medical records, and compare them. As well as, if you can, take notes too. If with everything else, when people come to visit you, make sure they bring pen and paper and say, any doctor that comes in here, you take notes. What did they say? What did you do? So this way, at least somebody can be your reporter and your advocate.
That's a very good point, and I have a personal experience with that. It's always good to have somebody with you in the office taking notes,
right,
being a witness to what is being said and what is being done. But I heard you say 20% of bills contain errors, but if I'm not mistaken, I think in your book you say that 80% of all hospital bills contain errors.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, that's what I meant. It's like what I see is it's 20% of the bill usually has an error, but
oh,
yes, 80% is in 80% of the bills. And it's turning out to be more. And now with these new codes coming out in October, all the systems are going to have to change. So you're going to have a lot more errors in bills come probably October is what I predict.
A lot more errors.
Yes.
That's even with Obamacare.
Even with, because it's all about the coding system. So the problem is now you have Obamacare and all of the changes and new rules coming out, but now you have a new coding system coming out. So it's going to be in 2000 this year, in about
2015.
Yeah, 2015, which is this year, they have what they call diagnosis codes. And in the past, there were ICD-9 codes, and this is a diagnosis. So when you go into the hospital and you have pneumonia, you get a code for that. And underneath that code has to be the codes that relate to that diagnosis. So if you go in for pneumonia and you have a code underneath there that talks about you breaking your leg, it's going to kick out of the system. Well, now you have to be careful because the codes are going to change to what they call ICD-10 codes. So now that they're changing, some offices are going to be on top of the game and some are just going to fall back because this costs money. And reimbursement's already gone down. So a lot of private practices, you're going to see a lot of mistakes within doctor bills, the professional component.
What's the purpose of having new codes? Is it to consolidate? Is it supposed to be, you know, make the system more coherent?
Well, the thing is with codes, you're having, it's part of it was supposed to be that. But then you have new technology coming out, new stents are coming out. So we need to put new codes on those and adjust them. The other thing they're trying to do within the legislation is do more of a bundled or a grouping. So the idea is to actually, if you go in for a certain procedure, say a hip replacement, then you'll have one bundled code for this is how much a hip replacement is going to cost for the whole procedure and everything. But there's still a lot of talk going on and how that's going to work.
We just have a few minutes left, but Michelle, a question that relates to something you said earlier about if you can bring someone to the office with you if you're sick or have to go into for surgery. But again, this necessity of watching everything, whatever the doctor does or the nurse, documenting. What if you're not terribly educated and you're not under Medicaid or you're not a senior citizen, so you're not eligible for Medicare? I mean, how can a less educated, not to mention sick person, be so on top of his situation? It just doesn't seem to be fair.
Oh, it's horrible in that sense. I've been through a lot of these situations. Be very, very careful with your information that you give out. In the United States, we have Social Security numbers. If you go into the ER or a facility, ask for a medical record number and make sure that your information is there. Make sure you read your benefits packet if you can. But again, always get a copy of your itemized bill, your medical records. Try to take notes and be persistent because you'd be surprised by just looking over even an educated guess. If you just and you say, listen, what is this? Ask to talk to a social worker or someone who's there. Make sure to document, send emails, put dates down, take down people's names, and make an appointment. Say, listen, I think there are errors in this bill, and I need to talk to someone today or tomorrow, or let's make an appointment, but put it in writing so you don't get penalized because you didn't pay a bill on time.
Well, as you know, Michelle, because we've talked about this before, I had a personal experience with the healthcare system that I've never had before. I had an accidental injury. In a case my listeners remember or not, there were a day or two, a couple of weeks back in September when I was not on the air because I was recovering from a broken wrist. It was an accidental injury, but I am still dealing with the aftermath of it today because of coding errors of which I was not aware. And now I'm in an appeal process because my insurance company refused to pay for a portion of the bill, which I am claiming that they are responsible for because it was an accidental injury. And they're saying no because you were in an outpatient facility and had the surgery. But again, they're saying that because the doctor's office coded it wrong. They didn't code it properly. They didn't say that Carol was an accident victim, even though they knew that. They simply said, well, she had outpatient surgery to, you know, fix her broken wrist.
And this is exactly what I was talking about. Is as long as you had those notes, you made sure to get a copy. You wouldn't have known this if you didn't get a copy of their bill and actually look it over and say, wait a second, I didn't have this happen. This didn't happen. It was you looking at it and questioning it. I've had people that go in and for a 20-minute injection, and basically they get coded for procedure, like surgery. And until they actually get that itemized bill and call up the insurance company and say, hey, what's this? What's going on? And they're like, oh, I just had that happen to someone. $800 copay, which was a lot. They billed the hospital $20,000. It should have only been $1,000 for the whole procedure. And they said, just ignore the bill. All you have to do is just ignore it.
Who said that? The insurance company?
The insurance company said, ignore the bill. So she said, all right, listening to Michelle, get it in writing, send it to me. But you know what? That bill just disappeared because she questioned it. And she knew something was wrong. It shouldn't have been $20,000. And it wasn't even a procedure.
Okay, but I'm having a problem with the insurance company itself. And this leads me to my next question. Isn't there a rather nefarious relationship between insurance companies and hospitals? They seem to be, as the phrase goes, in bed together, looking out for each other, to the detriment, again, of the patient. Because, again, I'm fighting both the hospital and the way they coded it, and they still have not at my request, corrected the coding, which was wrong, and also the insurance company, which is going along with the coding that the hospital provided, and therefore I need now, and I have taken it to an appeal level. So I'm fighting both of them.
Right. And this is going to be a process, and as I said, as long as you document things, what you need to do is the first appeal, always the first time. Generally, you have just an average person that just doesn't want to deal with it. They'll just push you aside. Then you go through that appeals process, and they always reject it usually the first time. Second time you go through, you have all your documentation. They're like, whoa, she's actually trying to fight it? Uh-oh, we weren't expecting this. So they take it a little more seriously, but then they might reject it. The third time you say, listen, I want an external review. And that's also listed under ACA Obamacare. The external review is keywords. As long as you have everything documented, just like you were documenting, they're going to take that a lot seriously. And this is going to be an outside board that's going to review it. Nobody who's associated with the hospital or the insurance company. And you have to understand it's also a vicious cycle. So the hospitals, what they're doing is double and triple charging, whereas the insurance company is reimbursing less. So if you actually go to a hospital, I just had this happen. I talked to some executives at a hospital, and the person who is at this one place said, okay, well, if you just ask us for the discount, we'll discount 90% of someone's bill. So it's a matter of getting to the right person, stating your case, letting them know, because they know they overcharge the hospital because they're trying to make up for the reimbursement reduction by the insurance company. And no one wants to, everybody's pointing the finger. No one wants to take the blame.
Indeed. Well, I certainly know that. Well, thank you for that, Michelle. And of course, I'm waiting cautiously optimistic, but I really don't know. But again, it just points to the fact that it's either buyer beware or patient beware. One has to really be on one's guard, which is just, you know, I think extremely unfortunate when you're sick, that you have to be constantly your own advocate in fighting against these institutions, which have only their own interests at heart and not that of the patient in too many cases. But as we close, let's talk about how we can prevent getting sick in the first place, which would be the best thing. And you have some excellent tips toward the end of your book, even something like washing your hands, which yes. I do regularly, and I claim that that's why I haven't gotten sick for the last 2 years. And of course, when we talk to people around the world, whether in Africa or in other developing countries, but particularly Africa with Ebola, thank God the crisis has passed. But it just points to the necessity and the importance of just simply washing one's hands. What else?
Right. Washing your hands is a huge thing. Door handles. Big. People don't realize just opening up the door to a bathroom, even in your own house. Make sure you wash the handles of anything, even your iPhone. Or your phone, any mobile device. Drinking lots of water, actually, flush out your system. I drink water before I go to bed. First thing in the morning, I drink water. I'm always drinking water. Try to do that instead of drinking the soda and juices. They have a lot of sugar in it. Try to avoid sugar because when you get sick, I am a sugar fanatic. Just whatever you do, try to stay away from sugar because just think of it this way. Sugar loves sickness. It feeds into it. And, you know, exercise is always good no matter what. Get that circulation going. And then there are certain things that you can do around the world. I've learned some ailments, such as ginger is one of my favorites. I'm putting ginger in everything. It's great for stimulation. It's great for, I do this little concoction with lemons, even has vitamin C in it. So you put lemons with ginger with a cinnamon stick in a tea, and it helps get the mucus when you have a sinus infection going. So there's so much out there. And that's why I did my whole book on basically my favorite tips that are in there.
And of course, it's eating regular foods, staying away from fast foods.
Yeah. Oh, I never have fast foods. Fruits and vegetables are great. You know, you don't have to go to an expensive place to get these. You can just, I get some fruits and vegetables at the dollar store. Very cheap. Just any grocery store, the farmer's market, or even a relative's backyard.
Well, the book is Healthcare Made Easy, Answers to All Your Healthcare Questions Under the Affordable Care Act. The author, Michelle Katz, healthcare advocate, nurse, and author. Well, Michelle, we love having you back. Thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Keith Holmes. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.